It's quite a cocktail. What happens when you mix Chinese officials with grain alcohol?
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and economics. Which part of this would you prefer me to emphasize? There's news today that economic growth in Europe probably slowed during this second half of the year and that unemployment will stay terribly high. Or I could point out the same European Commission data show that Europe's recovery will continue and that growth next year could come in at 1.1%. The BBC's Andrew Walker looks at it this way.
The Commission's forecast do confirm the general picture that we've been reporting for some time now, that the Eurozone's economic situation does seem to be stabilising, and we can, it seems, expect some sort of resumption of growth next year. But it has to be said, it is still pretty feeble-looking growth and actually slightly weaker than the previous forecast that we had from the Commission. So for the Eurozone, we're looking at growth of 1.1% next year. Even the year after 2015, a figure of merely 1.7%. Obviously an improvement on where the Eurozone has been in the recent past, but it still hardly counts as a boom.
BBC economics correspondent Andrew Walker. Advocates pushing for high-speed rail in America begin their annual meeting in Los Angeles today. The U.S. High-Speed Rail Association spends a lot of time dreaming about California. Construction is about to begin on a bullet train connecting L.A. and San Francisco. But as Kate Archer-Kent reports, outside of California, the shovel-ready projects are tough to find.
Passenger trains that go about 200 miles per hour are not hard to come by in Europe and Asia. But forget about the U.S. It's even unclear what a nationwide system would cost in the end. Stan Feinsod teaches at San Jose State's Mineta Transportation Institute. To get there, he says, the U.S. will have to stop prioritizing highway spending.
You can't buy more lanes. Passenger rail is a hell of a lot less expensive than building out your highway network.
But high-speed rail has other hurdles. Cato Institute senior fellow Randall O'Toole points to driverless cars and more efficient air travel.
I think the United States is ahead of the rest of the world. Rail makes a lot of sense for freight. It really doesn't make much sense for passengers anymore.
California's new high-speed rail is expected to cost $68 billion and carry more than 100 million people each year. I'm Kate Archer-Kent for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. The FT 100 index in London is down 0.6%, and the blah day for share prices is reflected in stock index futures in the U.S. at the moment. Dow S&P and NASDAQ futures all down. American exporters to Europe may not want to hear this, but American travelers might. The euro sank again this morning. It only costs under $1.35 to buy a euro.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
This coming weekend, Chinese leaders meet to hammer out economic reforms they hope will put the world's second biggest economy back on track. On one of the reforms, President Xi Jinping had started the ball rolling a year ago when he ordered government officials to stop with the lavish banquets. And that had a tremendous impact on the sales of Baijiu, a grain alcohol that'll knock you flat. But as Marketplace's China correspondent Rob Schmitz reports, one Chinese company has selected an American to save the day.
Jim Rice became CEO of Shuijingfeng Baijiu Company nearly a year ago. It was terrible timing.
About the time I arrived, the industry started to go on a slide. So my sales are down 50%. We've just given a warning to the stock market that our profit will be down between 80 and 100%.
Shuijingfeng, partly owned by a multinational Diageo, hired Rice because he's got a good track record of adapting foreign companies like Tyson Foods to China.
And my job role today is to take a very traditional Chinese company and a very traditional Chinese industry and adapt Western practices to it. And I've got to globalize this company.
Rice has to cut staff, prices, and expenses, but his biggest challenge might be a plan to market Baijiu to Americans. Inside Shui Jingfeng's distillery in the city of Chengdu, Rice shows me a 600-year-old baijiu pit. Next to that, mounds of mud covering a fermenting mixture of grains like rice, corn, and wheat, giving off baijiu's distinctive odor.
Well, it's sweet and a little bit rancid, I suppose.
This smell, Westerners compare it to anything from nail polish to dumpster juice, is baijiu's Achilles heel in markets outside of China. The Chinese drink it at room temperature, but if baijiu is served on ice, the smell is diminished. It's nearly erased if you mix it with other liquids. At a tasting event in California, Rice created four baijiu cocktails. One was a baijiu mojito. He says they were a hit. Back at the distillery, fresh, hot baijiu pours out of steamers.
That is 70% alcohol, so it's 140 proof. That's pretty strong stuff.
Rice stands next to a short, smiling man, the master distiller. He offers me a shot of his finest product with both hands. Refusing is out of the question. As they say in China, ganbei.
Wow, my mouth is on fire.
The master distiller grabs the shot glass from my hand and refills it from another vat.
Oh, I'm good with one. I don't know if I can...
But our master distiller thinks we should try them all.
How many are there?
Well, you don't have to swallow.
Okay, I'll sip it from here on.
And for this potential American customer, a baijiu mojito sounds pretty good right about now. Slightly drunk in Chengdu, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Taking it for the team. And at Marketplace Online, we have a nifty interactive tool where you can look at associations between how much you make and other behaviors. On this election day in many parts of the country, we have politics by income. Turns out the most liberal people make between $130,000 and $149,000 a year. The most conservative people, very same range, $130,000 to $149,000. That income level also has the fewest political moderates, our tool shows. Then from the ridiculous to the sublime, our income upshot machine will also look at income and TV watching, or income and belief in God. It's at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report on APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.